Hi, everyone. Beth, I'm an alcoholic. Home group is by the book in Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey. So, we are on page 111 in the chapter of Two Wives. And I just want to start with the preface of what we went over last week. I know I talk loud, but just in case. You know, in the beginning, I think I told you my first sponsor had ripped this chapter out of her book because she thought it was too male chauvinistic, and, you know, we're not going to read that. And so, I've learned how to look at this from an entirely different angle, as our book says, right? So how do I look at it? And it's been said, instead of calling it two wives, what if it was called two relationships? What if it was called two sponsees? Would I read it? Right? Because when we practice these principles in all our affairs, what are those principles? Well, we get some of them in the front of the book, but we get a lot more principles in the back of the book. And then I'm reminded in this chapter, when we go through the four different types of alcoholics that we have here, right? In the beginning of the book, we talked about the moderate drinker, the hard drinker, and the real alcoholic. But we got an even further breakdown from Bill of what those four types are. And I think I mentioned for me the one and two that haven't really accepted their alcoholism and still think that they're going to be able to drink someday somehow like a normal person. You know, that they seem to be the hardest to work with, but the three and fours, which I happen to, you know, be right in between the three and the four, I tend to see as the easiest to work with. But there's three important things that are in this chapter called Two Wives. It clearly tells me three things. Number one, what my alcoholism has done in my life to every relationship that I've had. Number two, what actions I can take when dealing with family members. And that's a lot of what we're going to get into this tonight. And then number three, that I've got to change and that God's going to make that difference in how I change, right? Because I always thought I could change myself by acting myself in a right living. And it's like holding my breath. I can only show up as a good daughter, a good worker for so long before this thing starts to take over. And I want to have a spiritual transformation so that I don't want the old character back. I don't want to be the old Beth. I want to be the one that God has brought me and directed me to be. And I need to have conscious contact with God throughout my day in order to do that. Otherwise, I'm just like a loose cannon. I told you, I don't have relationships. I have reactionships. Okay? So at the top of page 111, the very first principle. So again, there are 38 spiritual principles, probably more than that if you really wanted to break some of these sentences down. But the first spiritual principle in this chapter is the first principle of success is that you should never be angry. So my sponsor would say to me, if you turn that into a question, Beth, how often should you be angry? Right? Completely impossible for an alcoholic. If you're of my type, I use anger to manipulate and con people because if I can get angry with you, maybe it'll get you to act right. Right? And so I've learned today that anger is really fear, but I go right towards anger because anger feels like power. And I want power. I've always been looking for power. Lack of power is my dilemma, but I want some kind of power over you, so I'm going to get angry with you. Because you know what? If I get angry with you, husband, who's left the dishes in the sink for 3 days, maybe you'll do them. Right? Because I'm really scared and afraid that if he never does the dishes again, because I'm very dramatic and grandiose, right? Never, always were in my vocabulary, and I tell myself a really scary story about what may or may not happen. Right? It doesn't even take less than a half a second, and I got a story created where now I'm about to react on my husband. Right? Because I'm going to get what I want, and I want those dishes done. He damn well better know it ain't going to be me doing it. Right? Because that's how I show up to life without God, which is why I need conscious contact. So for me, right, I need to nip it in the butt at annoyance or frustration. Right? This is the spiritual plaque that builds up around me, though, where I just fly off the handle. And so when my husband goes and spends $3,000 on a credit card that we agreed to, if you get that credit card, you pay it off each month, you make small payments on it. Right? And then I find out through my credit report, because my name's on there, that he maxed it out, like, immediately. Right? So what happens in my head? Oh, boy. Right? I'm going to retaliate. I'm going to have a reaction on you. I told you. We agreed. We were on the same page. Unity. Tradition one. Right? We have group consciences in our household. We're both alcoholics. Right? We're supposed to be on the same page. You did me wrong. How do I nip it in the bud at that annoyance? And how do I approach from a place? Because you see, I called my sponsor. I wrote inventory. And I got real clear on that I, you know, if I don't have compassion towards me, I ain't going to have compassion towards him. What happens if he made a mistake? See, I'm not looking at that stuff when the emotions start happening. Richard Rohr calls our emotions narcissistic reactions to life. They are good servants or indicators of what's going on inside me. But they are not good masters. But see, I've always let my feelings have a vote in how I show up. And today I have to take a step back from that. And I have to get connected to God. And sometimes I have to let my emotions calm down. Write inventory. Get real clear. So in this instance, I'm able to go to my husband and say, so what happened? right? And allow him the dignity to have a conversation with me instead of me coming at this, you know, you did this to me, because everything's about me, 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 me. Right? Because I was able to approach it in such a loving way, and I found out he truly did make a mistake. He hasn't had a credit card. I don't even think he ever had a credit card. Right? He's like a little kid, and aren't we all like little kids, right? Dr. Harry Tebow says in AA Comes of Age that the alcoholic has a narcissistic, egocentric core. Right? These doctors got together, analyzed a whole bunch of alcoholics. I think it's back in the 12 of 12. It says we're children. Right? I have been playing the king and queen baby all my life. I just have these reactions where you need to make me feel good, and then I will never get angry. So how often should I be angry? Right? My level of where I'm at with my anger, that's my spiritual barometer today. That's how I know when I'm way off the beam. All right, even though your husband becomes unbearable and you have to leave him temporarily, you should, if you can, go without rancor. And that's bitterness, right? I'm the type of person, man, I'll keep score. 3 months later, I'll bring up that credit card situation. I don't want to live like that anymore. I'm not judge, jury, and executioner. I want to quit playing God and give God his job back. Right? I want God to change me so that I can come from a place of love and compassion. But I think I've said this before. The golden rule is I do to myself what I do to others. If I'm not loving and compassionate towards myself, I'm not going to be loving and compassionate towards you. If I don't let myself off the hook for mistakes, I ain't going to let you off the hook for mistakes. Right? So I allow God to change me, and I allow God to show me things and how I show up to life, which I make mistakes all the time. My husband was so relieved when my sponsor gave me some direction, and I came from love and compassion, and I allowed him to say, I made a mistake. It was a childish one. I made a mistake. I'm so thankful I have a wife that doesn't hold this stuff over my head. I'm like, wow, I am a different person. Okay, the next principle, number two. Patience and good temper are most necessary, right? And that patience is, I need, when that level of emotion comes up, whenever I am in fear, anger, or guilt, that's the ego's trilogy, fear, anger, and guilt. If I'm reacting from fear, anger, or guilt, I better do nothing. I better zip it. I need to let those emotions come down, because then I'm going to have a narcissistic reaction based on old emotions past. I only see the past, right? And patience means wait, like do nothing. Wait. Why am I talking? Wait. Right? So whenever I feel that emotion, I know the best thing that I can do is zip it. I've got to calm down in order to really be able to see clearly. But those emotions and those feelings, they feel so strong, and they've always just come right out of my mouth. And then I do damage. Right? So patience is a big one for me, and that good temper is having a good attitude, right? I have to learn how to be helpful here. But I was always harmful, right? I'm going to get you back. Our next thought is that you should, and here's the next principle, never tell him what he must do, right? Never. This is the only time I actually use the word never, right? I want to do the exact opposite of normally what I do, but I'm extremely defiant, right? But even in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, this is the way I talk to my sponsees, unless you have spiritual consent over me, or I have spiritual consent over you. I don't tell you what to do. You need to, you should, you ought to, right? The woman that approached me, yeah, she became my sponsor, so she was able to tell me those things. But today I want to stay right-sized in what I offer. So I say, here's what I did. Here's how I approached it. If I don't have experience, I zip it. I will find you someone that has experience. A woman called me tonight. She's in AA. She just came back. She's still sober. She left for a period of 2 years. She's going to school. I don't have that experience. So I'm not going to go in there and tell her what I think she ought to do. I don't have that experience, so I can't keep anything in the eye. So I'm not going to tell her what she should do. I'll direct her to someone that has that experience of going to school in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I know me, when you tell me things in the eye, I'm less defiant. And I'm willing to pick up the spiritual tools when I hear your own experience instead of people coming at me, because you tell me the sky is blue, I'm going to argue it's purple. I'm defiant. And Harry Tebow has said, defiant individuality in AA Comes of Age. I just don't like it. It continues, if he gets the idea that you are a nag or a killjoy, your chance of accomplishing anything useful may be zero. He will use that as an excuse to drink once more. He will tell you he's misunderstood. This may lead to lonely evenings for you. He may seek someone else to console him, not always another man. And so I do understand and I do relate to why that sponsor took that out. You listen, I'm not here. If I had a husband that told me he was an alcoholic, I'm not going to go back into babying you. right? I don't think that that's fair that I should, you know, treat you, you know, the alcoholic that's living in my home like a child now, right? But we are like children. So how do I get compassion for that? When I write my inventory, boy, do I take a lot of things personally. I've run around being a victim my entire life. It's like if Jill says, hey, Beth, you have green hair. I'm like, oh, I don't have green hair. But if Jill says, wow, you put on 10 pounds since I saw you last week. Boy, am I going to, I can't stand you now, Jill. And I may not character assassinate you to your face, but I will go home in the shower and I'll have things to say about Jill. But you see, I wasn't offended about the green hair because I don't believe I have green hair. Right? So I take things personally with old ideas and beliefs. The result was nil. And that's what we're uncovering, discovering, and discarding. But there's still things that I default to, which is why I have step 6 and 7 in my life. I know that when I show up for my mom in the nursing home today, and she's going to ask me to take her to Michael's, and I'm not going to do it because I have a pretty full schedule, that when I say no, she may call me evil and the B word and whatever else to try to get her way. And I know that that's normally the stuff that sets me off because I default to the old idea or belief is that if somebody is displeased with me, that there must be something wrong with me, especially when it hits close to the bone like that with a family member. So if I know that that's my default and I'm aware of it, step 6 is I'm aware of it and it becomes objectionable to me. Then I gotta have the humility in step 7 to go to God in the moment as it occurs. My mom says these things to reinforce that I need God esteem and God confidence. In this moment, God, help me to look at things from an entirely different angle so that I'm not so affected by what she says. Okay? Be determined that your husband's drinking is not going to spoil your relations with your children or your friends, right? And we call that emotional sobriety. We call that differentiation in the psychological world, right? What you do, don't do, say, don't say, right? Boy, it always used to have effect on me because I know how you should act. You need to make me feel good. And so I want to have a level of differentiation today where you can be you and I can be me, and it's not just muttering love and tolerance underneath my breath. I want to be able to allow you to turn freely in this world while keeping that differentiation. What does God think about me so that I'm not so wrapped up in what you think about me? Because I will make you my higher power. If you don't sit here and nod in agreement and, you know, seem to be in touch with me, all of a sudden you will be my higher power. If I'm not differentiated. When I'm differentiated, I don't care if you like what I'm saying or not, you know? Right? Because I know who I am. And that's come from the God esteem that I've developed in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I can lose that in a heartbeat, which is where I default to, which is why I need a spiritual solution on a daily basis. Okay, they need your companionship and your help. It is possible to have a full and useful life, though your husband continues to drink. And what a beautiful promise. So when I get a sponsee that comes in here and says, well, my husband's still drinking, bam, we're right at page 111. You could still live with somebody that else drinks and still get sober. Okay? We know women who are unafraid, even happy under these conditions. And here's the next principle. Do not set your heart on reforming your spouses. Can I accept them as is? I think I told you. I think, you know, you're cute, made me laugh, had a job. We had a relationship because I used to fool myself as to values, as our book says. I never had values. You had those four things together. We'd be in a relationship, and 6 months later, I think I'm Beth the Builder. Let's change him. You know what? You're really starting to bug me. Right? I don't want to make my peace of mind contingent on others either, right? I got a girl in my home group. Boy, my first 2 years in sobriety, she used to just light my hair on fire. I'd be writing inventory, sending it to my sponsor, and she'd be like, do you want peace more than you want her to be different? Well, yeah. But she, do you want peace? Because peace is always available to you. Can you accept them as is? Beth, you don't have to like everyone, but you do have to show them love. And I found that was a lot easier. Okay, we know these suggestions are sometimes difficult to follow, but you will save many a heartbreak if you can succeed in observing them. Your husband may come to appreciate your reasonableness. Now, nobody ever called me reasonable before Alcoholics Anonymous, and I can still be very unreasonable as an alcoholic. Give me my an opinion, preference, or judgment, and I will begin to think that mine are optimal to yours, right? And then I become very unreasonable. So that's something, that's another one of the principles that I want to try to practice. It says reasonableness and patience, right? Put me in the car and I can lose all my patience if I'm not spiritually centered, right? How dare you go the speed limit when I'm in the fast lane? I'm just going to the grocery store. I don't have to be there at any time. But all of a sudden, ego starts talking to me and it makes time an enemy. Because there's something about being at the center of my own universe in the bondage of self where everything's about me. And then I play the victim to you on how you're driving because I love to default to the victim. Mm-hmm. Right? And this is where I need God, but it still happens to me. I'm 6 years sober. I am not a saint. This may lay the groundwork for a friendly talk about his alcoholic problem. Try to have him bring up the subject himself. And here's the next principle. Be sure you are not critical. And my sponsor brings me to this line quite often, and she says, Beth, nobody wants to kiss the lips that have been chewing them out all day. Right? Because my husband, you left the socks on the floor again. Or this morning, oh my God, I have enough anxiety as it is. Don't you know I'm going to pick up my mother? I'm going to be there a certain time. And you left me with no gas. And that's my initial reaction. And then I get quiet and I let it calm down. And then I'm allowed to say to him, could you let me know the next time you're leaving the car without gas? And what he said was he didn't even realize it, right? Can I let him off the hook? But if I'd flown off the handle like I wanted to with that first initial thought, oh boy, it would not be pretty when I got home in my house. And I would be the one feeling guilt because I already reacted from anger, and then I feel guilt, then I feel fear. And whenever I react from fear, anger, and guilt, what I do is I create more fear, anger, and guilt. And the goal is to be at peace. So be sure you are not critical, right? During such a discussion, attempt instead to put yourself in his place. Boy, I was never able to do that with the, it was all about me. Let him see that you want to be helpful rather than critical, right? Well, for me today, when one person gets angry, the conversation is over because I know what's going to happen to me. Your pain body is going to jump off and it's going to be all over me. And I'm going to have a reaction. Today, I want to learn how to respond. Today, I want to accept people as is. Today, I want to write inventory so I can accept people as is. Because otherwise, it's not pretty when Beth comes out instead of a principal out of my mouth. When a discussion does arise, you might suggest you read this book or at least read the chapter on alcoholism. So Bill tells us a couple times, right? Read the chapter on alcoholism. Now, listen, I'm not going to go force this down my mother's throat. But, you know, if she was willing to, this might give her a different perspective of what alcoholism is. But even as a newcomer, my sponsor said, nobody needs to understand. Nobody's going to get it unless they're an alcoholic. And you don't need to force them to get it. Tell him you have been worried, though, perhaps needlessly. You think you ought to know the subject better, as everyone should have a clear understanding of the risk he takes if he drinks too much. And here's the next principle. Show him you have confidence in his power to stop or moderate. Right, and think about that with our relationships that we have with people, especially with sponsees, right? Am I crushing them? Right? You just came back into the rooms, you had a relapse, am I crushing you? Or am I lifting you up, showing you love, and showing you the way and saying, here's what I had to do. And then it's up to you whether or not you pick that up, but I'm not going to be mean, angry, a nag, and you're not picking up the tools I'm giving you, right? It's up to you. I'm going to love you no matter what you do. Say you do not want to be a wet blanket. Boy, can I still be one in sobriety sometimes with my husband. That you only want to take care of his health. Thus, you may succeed in interesting him in alcoholism. He probably has had several alcoholics among his acquaintances. You might suggest that you both take an interest in them. Drinkers like to help other drinkers. Your husband may be willing to talk to one of them. If this kind of approach does not catch your husband's interest, it may be best to drop the subject. But after a friendly talk, your husband will usually revive the topic himself. This may take patient waiting. We call that faith today. But it will be worth it. And then here is the next principle. Meanwhile, you might try to help the wife of another serious drinker. Right? Whether your spouse gets sober or not, right? That's saying that this, you can pick up the spiritual tools. Right? Whether my sponsee gets sober or not, right? What it does for my sobriety is help keep me sober. If you act upon these principles, right, helping other people, that's what we're here to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, is to help others, right, put others before myself. If you act upon these principles, your husband, your significant other, your sponsee may stop or moderate. Suppose, however, that your husband, your sponsee, fits in the description of number two. The same principles which apply to husband number one should be practiced, right? But after his next binge, ask him if he would really like to get over drinking for good. Do not ask that he do it for you or anyone else. Just would he like to, right? And isn't that what we ask our sponsees all the time, right? Are you willing to go to any lengths? Are you ready to quit for good and for all, right? We give people the respect, the dignity to make their own choices. But we ask the questions here, and then we watch. I watch people's feet move, right? I get a lot of lip service all the time. It's your actions that I'm watching for, just like my sponsor is watching my actions, whether or not I'm taking it. That's the proof, right? It's their responsibility whether or not they pick up the spiritual toolkit laid at their feet. Boy, would I love for them to do it. Boy, would I just love to hit them over with the big book and you're going to die type of stuff. But that's not what God's asking me to do. The chances are he would. Show him your copy of this book and tell him what you have found out about alcoholism. Show him that as alcoholics, the writers of the book understand. Tell him some of the interesting stories you have read. If you think he will be shy of spiritual remedy, ask him to look at the chapter on alcoholism. So there it is again, right? It doesn't say, read We Agnostics, you need to find a God or you're going to die, right? Somebody said that to me at the loft one time, and I had like 30 days sober, was in there complaining about, I hate this God thing, you know, because I'm going to overshare or new. And the guy walked out and he said, if you don't find a God, you're going to die. And I had a resentment for him for like 3 years after that. Now he's a part of my home group, and I went up and I hugged him and I loved him. He doesn't even remember saying it to me. But boy, I was the only one suffering from carrying that resentment around. Absolutely insane. Then perhaps he will be interested enough to continue. If he is enthusiastic, your cooperation will mean a great deal. If he is lukewarm or thinks he is not an alcoholic, and then here's another principle. We suggest you leave him alone, right? And in working with others, it says if they don't want what you have, find another prospect who is willing, right? I get a lot of women ask me for sponsorship, and then all of a sudden we lay out the program, and then give them a month, and they just don't feel like doing it, right? And I relate to that. So I can have compassion for that, because I told you every time I go to the gym in January, I buy this new pass and I go, I'm going to get fit and buff. And then 7 a.m. rolls around and I get up and I go, I don't feel like it, because I have based my life on how I feel. I don't feel like going to a meeting because it's raining, you know. I'd just rather lay on my sofa and watch Netflix all night. But those narcissistic feelings do not get a vote anymore in my life. They're just too fickle. But I've got to be aware of that, because it's real easy just to default into one of those. So we suggest you leave him alone. And then here's the next principle. Avoid urging him to follow our program. And if you are a wife or you are someone in the family, right, sometimes we have to suggest Al-Anon. I've suggested Al-Anon to my mom once. She's not interested. I don't bring up the topic, right? I lead by example. I make a demonstration of what it's like to be a maximum service to God and my fellows. And when I'm not doing that, I often owe an amends, and I promptly make amends quickly. The seed has been planted in his mind. He knows that thousands of men, much like himself, have recovered. There's that word recovered, right? But don't remind him of this after he has been drinking, for he may be angry. Sooner or later, you're likely to find him reading the book once more. Wait until repeated stumbling convinces him he must act, for the more you hurry him, the longer his recovery may be delayed. If you have a number three husband, right? I said three and fours for me are the easier to work ones. If you have a number three husband, you may be in luck. Being certain he wants to stop, that's the differentiation that number three wants to stop, you can go to him with this volume as joyfully as though you had struck oil. He may not share your enthusiasm, but he is practically sure to read the book, and he may go for the program at once. If he does not, you will probably not have to wait long. Again, you, and here's the next principle, should not crowd him. Let him decide for himself, right? So if we're looking at this from a sponsee perspective, right? Let him decide for himself. Cheerfully see him through more sprees. Talk about his condition or this book only when he raises the issue. Now, that cheerfully can be very hard to practice in my life. You know? And our concepts, it even says, cheerfully accept things, right? So at my home group, when they make the preamble change, boy, oh boy, there's not cheerfully accepting things by people, right? But I'm told that that's one of our principles that I'm supposed to practice, right? I'm responsible as an AA member. I may not have liked the switching back and forth or whatever. Am I making the demonstration? Or am I just sitting here taking your inventory? You idiots, don't you know that that's concept? Right? And then all of a sudden I feel justified and I feel a little smugly superior because I know something more, because ego has to prove that I'm a somebody and not a nobody. So I have to watch what this mind tells me. Right? Because I can get real caught up in an instant in creating walls and separation, and that separation is from God, from myself, and from my fellows. The idea in Alcoholics Anonymous is to have conscious contact, so that I'm not in that judgmental, critical, blameful, victimese mindset. I'm an alcoholic, so I often default there. Okay, in some cases, it may be better to let someone outside the family present the book. They can urge action without arousing hostility. If your husband is otherwise a normal individual, your chances are good at this stage, right? And we know today that we don't allow our family to tell our stories for us, right? We can go out and we can 12-step people, right? They can offer some help, right? But nobody tells my story for me, right? And then we have Al-Anon for them. You would suppose that men in the fourth classification would be quite hopeless, but that is not so. Boy, that wasn't so for me. Many of Alcoholics Anonymous were like that. Everybody had given them up. Defeat seemed certain, yet often such men had spectacular and powerful recoveries. And I think that's the miracle when we talk about some of the horrific things that have happened to some of us. And, you know, I was between a level 3 and probably a level 4 with where I was, you know, coming out of institutions, constantly being hospitalized, dying in front of my dad. I mean, and then I still go back out there, I leave the hospital, and what do? I stop at the liquor store because that thought, the mental obsession, is going to overpower my own sound reasoning. That's what I'm up against. The absolute insane thought is going to win out. It's the thoughts that hijack my mind without my permission. I have no control over when I'm going to get hijacked by it, which is why I need a spiritual solution that's going to be my remedy to stand in front of me in that drink. That's the only thing that's going to help me in those times. There are exceptions. Some men have been so impaired by alcohol that they cannot stop. Sometimes there are cases where alcoholism is complicated by other disorders. A good doctor or psychiatrist can tell you whether these complications are serious. In any event, try to have your husband read this book. His reaction may be one of enthusiasm. If he is already committed to an institution but can convince you and your doctor that he means business, here's the next principle. Give him a chance to try our method, right? Give him a chance to take the action. Seeing is believing. And that's why we share our experience, keeping in the eye, here's what I had to do. Here's what happened to me. I. Unless the doctor thinks his mental condition too abnormal or dangerous, we make this recommendation with some confidence. For years, we have been working with alcoholics committed to institutions. Since this book was first published, AA has released thousands of alcoholics from asylums and hospitals of every kind. Majority have never returned. The power of God goes deep. And isn't that a beautiful miracle and promise right there, that the power of God does go deep? You may have the reverse situation on your hands. Perhaps you have a husband, significant other, a sponsor, who is at large but who should be committed. When they become too dangerous, we think the kind thing is to lock them up. But, of course, a good doctor should always be consulted, right? I got to remember, I'm not a doctor. I got to stay right-sized in that. The wives and children of such men suffer horribly, but not more than the men themselves. But sometimes you must start life anew. We know women who have done it. If such women adopt a spiritual way of life, their road will be smoother. If your husband is a drinker, you probably worry over what other people are thinking, and you hate to meet your friends. You draw more and more into yourself, and you think everyone is talking about conditions at your home. You avoid the subject of drinking, even with your own parents. You do not know what to tell the children. When your husband is bad, you become a trembling recluse, wishing the telephone had never been invented, or Facebook. Right, but, you know, I had no idea until I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I worked my first step, fourth step, that I had this such fear of what other people think of me. No, totally clueless. Totally clueless that I give other people more power over my mind and my emotions than I have. You know, I'm in this situation at work right now. My boss is moving on to another job. The boss above her has been let go because they've downsized, and now I'm reporting to the director. And I don't really like him. And then I look at some of that stuff, and there's some fear going on in me. And so what I said to him this week when he sat down with me, and boy, he just likes to, you know, fling off the instant messages and bug. He wants to call me and have me answer the video chat when I've got 50 million things going on. Stop what I'm doing and answer this call. That kind of communication style doesn't work so well with me. I have a completely different communication style. And so what I said to him this week was, when he was bugging me about what could be done differently, what could he do to make my transition a little more smoother to him, what I said to him was, I'd like to sit down and discuss our communication style. I think we should get on the same page. And then the mind starts clicking. Oh, my God, I shouldn't have said that. Oh, my God, what did I set off? Oh, my God, he's not going to be happy with me. But you know what? If I hadn't said that, and I decide to leave the job in 6 months, I would have regretted not saying that because I was afraid to not say that when I should have said it because I'm asking for what I want. I'm not self-abandoning. I asked in a nice, kind way. Now, I can't have expectations on how this is going to go when we sit down, but what he said to me was, well, let's talk about it now. And I said, I'm not ready to talk about it now. I'd like to get my thoughts together and get back to you. Well, what's bothering you so bad? I just said, and this is not my first thought. My first thought is, well, this is what's bothering me, is that I just asked you for time, and now you're aggravating me about, you know, let's get to the bottom of it now. Zip it. I would just like some time to gather my thoughts, to communicate, because I'm sure I want to do a good job for you, and I'm sure there's some things that I can change about my communication style that we can get along better. I wasn't able to do that before sobriety. But beating myself up after I said that, oh, shouldn't have said that, right? Fear of what other people think of me. And then I have to look at it. That was an actual great thing of self-love that I was able to, you know, say, I want to sit down and ask for what I want. Doesn't mean I'm going to get it. Now, I can't be attached to the outcome, and I cannot have expectations because that will set off the whole spiral of, you know, selfish self-centeredness, the root of my troubles, right? We find that most of his embarrassment is unnecessary. While you need not discuss your husband at length, you can quietly let your friends know the nature of his illness. And then here's the next principle. But you must be on guard not to embarrass or harm your husband. You know, and again, we're not walking around with an alcoholic in our home treating him with kid gloves. That's just not 2023, right? But with sponsees, right? Am I trying to embarrass you after you come back from a relapse? Am I trying to embarrass you at that relationship you got into? And I said, you should probably wait until your fifth step when you know what your harms are. Because it says we're quite sure to relapse, right? And drink again if we haven't done our fifth step in our sex relationships. When you have carefully explained to such people that he is a sick person, you have created a new atmosphere. And we call this paragraph the honesty principles. Barriers which have sprung up between you and your friends will disappear with the growth of sympathetic understanding. You will no longer be self-conscious. You know, I was so self-conscious when I got sober. It was like nearing the nerves on the outside of my skin. I remember having to go to like my first happy hour at work and being squirmy and fearful and afraid. I'm not going to survive this. And my sponsor said, you're going to show up there and you're going to be interested instead of trying to be interesting, Beth. You're going to go around and you're going to interview everyone and ask them questions because who doesn't like to talk about themselves? And that's the way you're going to stay out of your own self-consciousness. Because self-consciousness would be so painful. Me thinking about me. Ah, it's painful. So you will no longer be self-conscious or feel that you must apologize as though your husband were a weak character. He may be anything but that. Your new courage, good nature, and lack of self-consciousness will do wonders for you socially. Right? And the principle of sympathetic understanding. That one sometimes can be hard for me to do because when this thing starts going, it's all about me. But when I remember that I need to practice sympathetic understanding, that I can have peace no matter what. So that when my mom shows up today and starts telling me that I'm evil, can I have sympathetic understanding that this is the effect that my alcoholism has had on my family? They just fly off the handle and have reaction shifts just like I do, but I'm not going to let you off the hook. The same principle applies in dealing with children. Unless they actually need protection from their father, it is best not to take sides in any argument. You know, I have sponsees that call me, my husband did this, my boyfriend did that, blah, blah, blah. And I know I'm only getting one side of the story. I'm not taking sides in that. My job is to lead you to spiritual principles, not to take sides. You know, I had one lady, she's like, I'll put my husband on the phone with you. I was like, no, you're not. I am not qualified to deal with the family. I ain't a therapist. I ain't a drama manager. I am here for as your sponsor, and we are dealing with your spiritual condition, not his. All right, so it is best not to take sides in any argument he has with them while drinking. And here's another principle. Use your energies to promote a better understanding all around. Boy, is that hard to do after my husband wants to put his opinions on me. I don't want to promote understanding. I normally think my judgments, my opinions, and preferences are optimal. And then my mouth starts running and I give you a running stream of my thoughts. No, I got to zip it. then that terrible tension which grips the home of every problem drinker will be lessened. And that's the promise, right? When I practice these principles, don't take sides in arguments, promote a better understanding, have sympathetic understanding. Frequently, you have felt obligated to tell your husband's employers and his friends that he was sick, when as a matter of fact, he was tight, right? He was drunk. And then here is one of the things that I love. Avoid answering these inquiries as much as you can. Whenever possible, let your alcoholic explain. Your desire to protect him should not cause you to lie to other people when you have a right to know where he is and what he is doing, right? If my sponsee goes out drinking and someone asks me, you know, about them, do I tell them, I don't know, right? A sponsee walks back into the room. Do I allow them to explain it, or am I running around telling everybody she relapsed? It's not my job. Allow them to speak for themselves, right? Discuss with him when he is sober and in good spirits. Ask him what you should do if he places you in such a position again. But, and then here's the principle, be careful not to be resentful about the last time he did so. Right? If I'm still resentful, I've still got to write inventory. There are things that still come up in me from time to time, and it's like that old threadbare idea where ego just likes to pick up stuff, because it's like, especially when I'm bored or I don't have much going on in my life, I will look for things to scratch that don't itch, which is why I need to write inventory on these things, because I will default back into some of the old behaviors. There is another paralyzing fear. You may be afraid your husband will lose his position. You are thinking of the disgrace and the hard times which befall you and the children, right? Financial insecurity. This experience may come to you, or you maybe already have had it several times. Maybe it would happen again. Regard it in a different angle. Maybe it will prove a blessing. And that's the I don't know principle. I don't know where God's going to bring me, especially in early sobriety. I have like $30,000 in debt, was two mortgage payments behind, barely, you know, I don't know how many payments behind in my car, but I was just full of fear. I thought I was going to lose everything, right? I had such financial insecurity, and I'm making a job that is not paying me enough, and then I get to amends, and my sponsor tells me, you need to pay these amends back, and I'm sitting there already watching that nine-step amends as you're reading it in my first couple of days going, that sounds really expensive. I don't want to do that. You know, but I don't know what God had planned. I started making those amends, barely had a nickel in my name to spend after that. Well, you know, some guys in my home group one night when I was sharing on the seventh tradition, I said, I don't have money to put in the basket. Everybody has money to put in the basket. And then I'm angry and resentful at him. Right? But I didn't know God was going to take me to something much bigger, but I had to start paying those amends at year three. I ended up getting this new job, which has given me a lot more ability to pay for these things and to continue to make these financial amends. But my first 3 years, it was living paycheck to paycheck, having faith in your God that God was going to bring me to something else, because I don't know what God's plan is. And whenever I'm in it, it feels like the worst thing in the world. And that's where I need to pick up spiritual principles in this moment, God, head over my feet, head in the clouds with God, feet from my planet. In this moment, I'm okay. But the mind starts ticking and starts telling me I'm not going to be okay, and tells me a really scary story about what may or may not happen. And when I'm listening to that, that's the ego's scariness. I'm disconnected from God, and I'm disconnected from you, and I'm disconnected from the God inside me. And so I've learned to have faith. And sometimes I have to be willing to have faith. It may convince your husband he wants to stop drinking forever. And now you know that he can stop if he will. Time after time, this apparent calamity, right, and this would be my apparent experience, has been a boon to us, for it opened up a path which led to the discovery of God. I live life forwards, but I understand it backwards, right? Looking at all that financial insecurity in the beginning and the fearful, squirmy stories that I was telling myself and not believing that I would be okay, and finding out years later that I've always been okay. God has always taken care of me. It's just I had to let go of these attachments to what I think things should look like, right? Because I've been shoulding all over the place my entire life. I should, they should, the world should, because I think I'm God. I don't know what God has planned. You like the shoulding thing, right? All right, now we're going to get into some more God things. All right, we have elsewhere remarked how much better life is when placed on a spiritual plane. If God can solve the age-old riddle of alcoholism, he can solve your problems too. Right? This is where I don't want to be on a spiritual hilltop with people, but I want to, you know, boast a little bit about what God has been able to do in my life. Do I believe, or am I now willing to believe, that God can transform me? Do I believe, or now do I now believe? There's these principles all over our big book. I think I left the pages at home. But it's absolutely miraculous, this exercise that this sponsor had me do about what God does for us. It's all in our big book, and I often meditate on these things because it gives me, am I having a belief, a willingness? You know, do I believe that God is my creator, my father, the director, or do I believe that I'm working for Anheuser-Busch, which happens to be my employer, right? Right? Where am I at on these things? And I meditate on these things, and I use them in my 11-step nightly questions to see how far away I am from God during my day. Not to beat the crap out of myself, because we're not supposed to be critical, it says in the 11th step, but upon awakening, when I review my day to come, it's not, you know, the 101, this is what I have on my calendar, that's just called basic living 101. It's where am I at today and where am I going to be useful and helpful? What am I going to come up against today where I might default to things because I'm with my mother? Right? And where do I need God? Where did I create that separation yesterday, or where do I default to that I better invite God in because I'm going to need him a lot more today in these instances? So upon awakening, that's what I'm using these principles for. That's what I'm using these God meditations for that I have in this big book. If God can solve the age-old problem, he can solve your problems too. We wives found that, like everybody else, we were afflicted with pride, self-pity, vanity, and all the things which go to make up the self-centered person. They, like ourselves, are fourth step. They, like ourselves, we have made them neurotic. They suffer from the exact same thing, the pride, the pity, the vanity, all the things which go to make up the self-centered person. If I can go through a fourth step and see that I throw up that way, can I have compassion that I show up that way so that when they start showing up that way, I have the ability to let them off the hook because I know I have behaved that way for 40 years and done a lot of damage. Normally, I'm not ready and able to just let it off the hook. I like to play the victim or let you have it, tell you where you're wrong. Where's my compassion? I did a lot of damage. And we were not above selfishness or dishonesty. As our alcoholic began to apply spiritual principles in their lives, we began to see the desirability of doing so too, right? Attraction, right? That's what we're doing in our homes, occupations, and affairs, is attraction. I'm not telling anybody at work I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous, but I am making a demonstration of what it's like to put these principles before myself so that I'm not hellfire and brimstone with that director who's bugging the crap out of me in that moment, right? Tell me what's going on. I want to know what your communication style is right now. At first, some of us did not believe we needed this help. We thought on whole we were pretty good women, capable of being nicer if our husbands stopped drinking, right? If you would just act right, I would be okay. Isn't that what I think? Well, they think the same thing is what he's saying. But it was a silly idea that we were too good to need God, right? It works. Now we try to put spiritual principles to work in every department of our lives. Every, right? This is why I need conscious contact with God throughout my day, or I just, you know, forget about God, leave him in the back seat, and I'm driving down the road, and my finger's out. When we do that, we find it solves our problems, too. The ensuing lack of fear, worry, and hurt feelings is a wonderful thing. Well, wow, I know I would love to have lack of fear, not have worry. My sponsor says if you have time to worry, you have time to pray and meditate, right? I know I can let everybody hurt my feelings, right? I'm an extremely sensitive alcoholic. Our book tells us we are sensitive people, right? And this is saying so are the people in our immediate family. Wow, the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree, right? But now that I'm sober, I ain't gonna let you off the hook. We urge you to try our program, for nothing will be so helpful to your husband as the, here's the next principle, the radically changed attitude toward him which God will show you how to have, right? God's role in my attitude. I am assigned a role, the fear step prayer says. God has assigned me the role. Today, God has assigned me the role of a daughter. Now, I may not love my mother as a daughter should, but I love my mother as God should. Because God makes that possible, not Beth. right? Because when I try to show up to the nursing home and pick her up out of there and take her for 5 hours, the story starts snapping. I wake up with a ball of anxiety this morning that he told you the car was empty of gas, and that really just escalates the whole thing in me, right? And then I already did prayer and meditation. I'm like, well, that didn't work. Because I need more God, and I have to reconnect. And then it becomes a step six and a step seven, right? God will show me how to have the attitude that I need in this moment. And in the next moment, God, when the thing starts acting up in the head again, in the next moment I will check back in with you, God, only if I find it objectionable. Sometimes I don't find it objectionable. There's something Eckhart Tolle says, that we love a little negativity in our life because we think that if we get negative, it'll get us what we want. And if you won't listen to my sad, poor me story about what I have to go through with my mom today, then I can tell it to myself over and over and over again in my own head. And that's just insane, right? And I want to get free of that stuff because I want to have peace in my life today. I like to say I have big islands of peace, but sometimes I go for a swim. This morning I happened to go for a swim, but it's not a swim as long as I used to go for it, right? So I went for a swim a little while, and then I got reconnected to God, prayed, put on some spiritual stuff in the car, right? And before I went into the nursing home, God, what would you have me be? I am assigned a role here today, and I want to play the role that you would have me be. If you and your husband find a solution for the pressing problem of drink, you are, of course, going to be very happy. But all problems will not be solved at once. Seed has started to sprout in a new soil, but growth has only begun. In spite of your newfound happiness, there will be ups and downs, right? I can't have fantasy thinking. My relationships are not going to be perfect. It ebbs and flows, and there's days when, you know, I have amazing relationships with people, and there are days when I'm just too stuck in me. Or I'm just not thinking about you. Many of the old problems will still be with you. This is as it should be, right? So I want to be realistic about things. I always compared my life, because I'm so grandiose, right? Comparing my life to that Hallmark card, right? Things should look differently. You should have the gas tank full of gas, and then I would be happy. Right, so I'm watching for those stories because I take 10% of the facts. You know, Jill looked at me wrong. Boy, I write a story in my head and I'm unrealistic, because Jill should love, validate, and respect me. And Jill, you know what? If you're not making me feel loved, valued, and respected, then I'm just going to internalize that. Right? Because that's what we do as alcoholics. Bill Wilson says in her emotional sobriety letters, right, I have faulty emotional dependencies. I've been depending on you for my self-esteem, my pride, my security. I got to get that from God. The newcomers that come in the room, I don't feel enough. It's like, you're not, because you need God. The faith and sincerity of both you and your husband will be put to the test. Here's another principle. These workouts should be regarded as part of your education, right? I grow and I learn by practice, right? But when I'm in it, I don't like being in it. And my sponsor would say to me, this is going to be for your spiritual growth. And I'd be like, well, this really sucks. But every time I look backwards, I have come out with such amazing growths or insights, or sometimes, you know, I go back into, I'm not entirely willing to find this objectionable, and then I cause myself more pain, and that would be the 6 and 7 that I don't want to adapt in my life, right? Because, let's just face it, I'm an alcoholic. I sometimes like sitting in the muck, you know, because it feels comfortable, even though it's really icky, and that's the sad part about being an alcoholic. You will make mistakes, right? And I can't have fantasy thinking that I won't make mistakes. Right, I think I told you I made a mistake at work. My boss found out. My head makes it into a really big deal. I go back into the alcoholism, which is illusions and delusions. The illusion is that if I never make a mistake, I'll be okay. The delusion, or actually that's the delusion, but the illusion is that somehow, someday I'm going to be perfect. I am human. I will never rise above my humanness, spirituality of imperfection. Great book. So you will make mistakes, but if you are in an earnest way, they will not drag you down. Am I letting them drag me down? Right? I got to look at this stuff on a daily basis. Instead, you will capitalize them. Am I capitalizing when I make mistakes, or am I going into myself, I'm the worst of the worst, which we call pride in reverse in the 12 and 12. A better way of life will emerge when they are overcome. Some of the snags you will encounter are irritation, hurt feelings, and resentments. Oh, well, if they will encounter it, and we know I've already encountered it, right? Your husband, your alcoholic, sometimes be unreasonable, and you will want to criticize, starting from a speck on the domestic horizon, great thunderclouds of dispute may gather. These family dissensions are very dangerous, especially to your husband. Often you must carry the burden of avoiding them or keeping them under control. Never forget that resentment is a deadly hazard to the alcoholic, right? They have the power to kill us, our big book says. We do not mean that you have to agree with your husband whenever there is an honest difference of opinion. Just be, here's the principle, careful not to disagree in a resentful, critical spirit. And I told you the words that I use when we don't agree is, you may be right, period. That's one way of looking at it, period. I do not get into a tennis match of hitting the ball back because I know as an alcoholic, I tend to think that my opinions, preferences, and judgments are superior, and I'm going to tell you where you're wrong. Today, with disagreements, I say to my husband, you may be right. Or, you know what, let's wait, as the principal says beforehand and the family afterwards, right? This is getting heated. I think we should take some time and revisit it. That's hard to do sometimes. But so far, we're a little trained on that because now he uses that against me and I go, oh, I know he has an opinion, preference, or judgment that he thinks is superior to me. All right, so I'm going to breeze through these because we're almost done, but we're running on time. You and your husband will find that you can dispose of serious easier than you can the trivial ones. Okay, here's the principle that I was just talking. It's not in family afterwards. Next time you and he had a heated discussion, no matter what the subject, it should be the privilege of either to smile and say, and this is what we say in our household, this is getting serious. I'm sorry I got disturbed. Let's talk about it later. If your significant other is trying to live on a spiritual basis, he will also be doing everything in his power to avoid disagreement or contention, right? Again, if I have an emotional charge or something, I must step away until it comes down because I just can't see clearly. Those are the narcissistic reactions that Richard Rohr talks about in his emotional sobriety. Your significant other knows he owes you more than sobriety. He wants to make good, yet you must not expect too much. His ways of thinking and doing are habits of years. And here's principles. These are the ninth step watchwords. Patience, tolerance, understanding, and love are the watchwords. Show him these things in yourself, and they will be reflected back to you from him. Live and let live is the rule. If you both show a willingness to remedy your own defects, there will be little need to criticize each other. Right? I do to myself what I do to others. I'm responsible for me. I'm not responsible for how you show up, husband, what you say to me. I'm not responsible for your feelings, right? But I always ran around saying, you make me feel, because I was so emotionally immature, I didn't know anybody had the power to make me feel a certain way. Women carry with us a picture of an ideal man, the sort of chap he would like our husbands to be. It is the most natural thing in the world, once his liquor problem is solved, to feel that he will now measure up to that cherished vision, right? That Hallmark card that I'm comparing you to, right? I'm now Beth the Builder. Chances are he will not, for like yourself, he is just beginning his development. And there's that be patient principle again. Another feeling we are very likely to entertain is one of resentment, that love and loyalty could not cure our husbands of alcoholism. We would not like the thought that the contents of a book or the work of another alcoholic has accomplished in a few weeks that which we have struggled for years, right? Scratch an alcoholic, find a codependent, you know, they have Al-Anon, we're just the same way. Oh, I couldn't fix them, why not? Well, you know, let's pick up a resentment for that. At such moments, we forget that alcoholism is an illness over which we could not possibly have any power, right? I don't have any power over anybody except for the power that God has over me. Your husband will be the first to say that it was your devotion and care which brought him to the point where he could have a spiritual experience. Without you, he would have gone to pieces long ago. Here's another principle. When resentful thoughts come, try to pause and count your blessings. So when we say that there's no gratitude anywhere in this book, this is where I say it is. Count your blessings, right? Well, I got a resentful thought. I count my blessings, right? It's real hard when I'm resentful to find three things I'm grateful for. After all, your family is reunited, alcohol is no longer a problem, and you and your husband are working together toward an undreamed of future. What a great promise. Still another difficulty is that you may become jealous of the attention he bestows on other people, especially alcoholics. You have been starving for this companionship, yet he spends long hours helping other men and families. You feel he should. See, they're shitting on us too, right? He should now be yours. The fact that he should work with other people to maintain his own sobriety, sometimes he'll be so interested, he becomes really neglectful. Your house is filled with strangers. You may not like some of them. He gets stirred up about their troubles, but not all about yours. It will do little good if you point out and urge more attention for yourself. We find it a real mistake to dampen his enthusiasm for alcoholic work. You should join in his efforts as much as you possibly can. We suggest that you direct some of your thought to the wives of the new alcoholic friends. And again, we say Al-Anon. They need the counsel and love of women who have gone through what we have. It is probably true that you and your husband have been living too much alone, for drinking many times isolates the wife of alcoholic. Therefore, you probably need fresh interests and a great cause to live for as much as your husband. If, here's another principle, you cooperate rather than complain, and I was a constant complainer, right? I have to look at that. Am I a constant complainer in the meeting, my home group, about the speaker, right? Am I complaining about work, the traffic, right? If you cooperate rather than complain, you'll find that his excess enthusiasm will tone down. Both of you will, and here's another principle, awaken to a new sense of responsibility for others, right? And that's what we're doing here. You, as well as your husband, ought to think of what you can put into life instead of how much you can take from it, right? Am I still working? Am I making the world a better place because I'm giving? Or am I just still being a taker in Alcoholics Anonymous? Inevitably, our lives will be fuller for doing so. You will lose the old life to find a much better one. Again, I don't want my old life. I want the one that God's creating for me, which has been new and miraculous and wonderful. And I couldn't have imagined that I'm the person that I am today. Perhaps your husband will make a fair start at the new basis. But just as things are going beautifully, he dismays you may be coming home drunk. Right? Alcohol is the great persuader, as our book says. If you're satisfied he really wants to get over drinking, you need not be alarmed. Though it is infinitely better that we have no relapse at all, as has been true with many of our men, it is by no means a bad thing in some cases. Your husband will see it once, and here's another principle, and I call this the relapse principle. He must redouble his spiritual activities. So when a sponsee comes back to me with relapses, this is where we go to. We read this part, and they must redouble their spiritual activities if they expect to survive, that sentence says. And here's the next principle. You need to remind him of his spiritual deficiency. He will know of it. And then here's another principle. Cheer him up and ask him how you can still be more helpful. Right? I'm not here to beat you down. You're so selfish. You failed to perfect and enlarge your spiritual life. The slightest sign of fear of intolerance may lessen your husband's chance of recovery. In a weak moment, he may take your dislike of a high-stepping friend as one of those insanely trivial excuses to drink. And then another principle. We never, never try to arrange a man's life so as to shield him from temptation. And we're told that over and over again, right? We can't put him on an iceberg in Iceland, right? It's just not going to work. We find a way to drink. The slightest disposition on your part to guide his appointments or his affairs so he will not be tempted will be noticed. Make him feel absolutely free to come and go as he likes. This is important. If he gets drunk, don't blame yourself. God has either removed your husband's, your sponsees, your significant other's liquor problem, or he has not. It's not my job. I am not your higher power, and I'm not blaming myself. If you drink, it's on you. If you don't drink, it's still on you. I am just the vessel that God is using, right? If not, it had better be found out right away. Then you and your husband can get right down to fundamentals. If a repetition is to be prevented, and here's the next principle, place the problem along with everything else in God's hands. And that's the answer we give to people, right? You've got to place everything in God's hands. We realize that we have been giving you much direction and advice. We may have seemed to lecture. If that is so, we are sorry, for we ourselves don't always care for people who lecture us. And boy, sometimes we can do that in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I can still do that, right? But I try to do that, and I try to keep it in the eye, and I try not to go on and on and on. But what we have related is based upon experience, some of it painful. And then I love this line. We had to learn these things the hard way. Right? But I still have fantasy thinking everything should be easy. I should be comfortable all the time, you know? This is why we are anxious that you understand and that you avoid these unnecessary difficulties. So to you out there who may soon be with us, we say good luck and God bless you. And thank you for having me.